Well, as I said, it is time for KBUT's show Community Matters, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host Chris Rourke. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Christopher.
And it looks like we have now joining us Zach Guy of the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. Hello, Zach.
Hey, good evening.
And Ian Havlick is just jumping in on the meeting. Thanks for having us, Ian. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Thanks so much, Chris. Psyched to be here again.
Absolutely, guys. So we've had plenty of conversations with you both throughout this season. It's been a little while since we've had a full update from the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. Let's start out with a look at the snowpack. Zach, can you help us out there?
Yeah, it's been a wild, wild week for us for sure. Really starting about 9 days ago or so is when our first major persistent slab avalanche cycle started. And then it's been ongoing chaos since then, to be totally blunt. Let's see. So we've got our dry spell layers that form during a long dry spell, both in early December and then again in January. As you know, when we have long periods of dry weather, that means the snow surface gets really weak. And so when you have a weak snow surface like that, it turns into a persistent weak layer that can be a problem once you start putting snow on it. We started getting snow January 19th. It's been stacking up kind of slowly for a while. We've been seeing avalanche activity throughout the whole time period, but getting a little bit larger and larger progressively. And then we kind of reached a tipping point here in the last week or so where we started seeing very large avalanches that are running really long distances, breaking wide across the terrain. Our biggest cycle, we had a pretty impressive cycle not this last weekend, but the weekend before. So Saturday and Sunday of the previous weekend, where we got kind of a surprise storm that delivered up to 20 inches of snow into the Northwest Mountains. And then the next day, the sun came out and the temperatures rose to about 40 degrees. And we saw, both with the snow and then with the warming right after that, we saw a pretty impressive persistent slab cycle. We were seeing a couple up to size D3. D3 means it's large enough to snap trees and destroy a wood frame house. And then a lot of D2s. And then things quieted down for a little bit. And then we got a big storm again on Wednesday. Saw more activity there. We got about a foot of new snow, maybe 15 or 18 inches in the deeper part of the forecast area. And then on Friday night, the walls really came down in a big way. We got another kind of surprise storm where we were expecting a few inches, but it snowed up to, I think, 17 inches out of Irwin, 4 inches in town. But the bigger thing was we got strong northwest winds that came in with that storm, and the combination of snow and wind all at the same time finally broke the camel's back. And if anyone's been looking out their window in the last day or two, you've seen just huge avalanche crowns all over the mountains. We've documented, just since Friday, we documented 90 slab avalanches of size 2 or larger. Size 2 means it's large enough to bury or kill somebody. Nine of those, at least nine, and I'm sure there's more, were size 3 or larger, meaning could break trees, break a house. And, you know, some of these avalanches ran from mountaintops all the way down to the valley bottom. They filled up creeks or they crossed roads. So pretty impressive cycle. Really, avalanches happening on almost all aspects, especially the eastern half of the compass, where the winds have been blowing out of the west, loading onto the east. Slabs breaking probably on average 4 feet thick, and deeper parts of the forecast area more like 6 feet thick. They're going on those January layers, the January dry spell, that, like I said, the January 19th weak layer, and then they're also going down on the ground. We're seeing, you know, dirt resurface on our mountains now for the first time since it was sitting there in November. So it's been a exciting week, a sleepless week. Fortunately, in the Crested Butte area, we haven't had any fatalities. We had a close call where somebody was fully buried, but they were successfully rescued. That was on Saturday. We can talk more about that later. And then statewide, it's been a tragic week. We've had 4 fatalities this week around Colorado, or in the past, maybe it's 9 days or so now. And around the country, the numbers are breaking records, the amount of fatalities, and that's probably a good subject we could dive deeper into as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and we will be talking about that for sure. I wanted to ask before we move on, though, we do have a lot of listeners, of course, that are very experienced and know a lot more about avalanche conditions than others. Of course, then we have listeners who would be considered layman as well. You could put me in probably the layman category. And I'm wondering, the other major avalanche cycle, as hearing you talk, it's reminding me of the major avalanche cycle that this area in Colorado went through, I believe, two seasons ago. But that cycle seemed to have a lot more to do with just the amount of snow and how wet and heavy it was. It seems as though this cycle had more to do with conditions as opposed to amount of snow. Is that accurate?
Yeah, there's definitely some differences in that cycle. That cycle was larger. The size of avalanches were, historic in the sense they're expanding runouts. When I was talking about sizes, I've been saying mostly size two and some size three, and that cycle was size three to size four. So even significantly bigger than what we've been seeing. And that, that was a combination of a snowpack structure that was weak but strong enough to hold quite a bit of snow throughout the whole season. And then finally, just a massive amount of snow that came in March and really broke the camel's back there with, I think it was a atmospheric river event over the course of a week that just kept piling and piling snow. And finally, that basal weak layer was able to hold on for much of the season in most areas. And then finally, it just came down in a big, dramatic way, whereas this season's quite a bit different, that we have a very weak layer that was well-known, horrible structure, and we knew it's going to break, and this, it didn't take a whole lot of a load. I mean, it's been building up progressively through a relatively dry snow winter. Like, we're at something like 75% of average, so we haven't really had an impressive amount of snow this year, but we knew it was on, that it was going to break at some point, and this, a combination of several things. First, it was snow loading, then it was warming, and then lastly, it was more the wind that broke it. It's just a very reactive weak layer that really, like, wakes up to any number of environmental changes. And so we're kind of walking around on our tiptoes out there in the backcountry right now, just because it's very fragile, and it's a tough layer to kind of handle right now.
We're talking to Zach Guy and Ian Havlik of the Crested Butte Avalanche Center tonight on KBUT's Community Matters. My name is Christopher Biddle. I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Rourke. We ask that you do please join the conversation, 970-349-7444. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking to two reporters on their coverage of Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. Again, 970-349-7444. And Ian, feel free to jump in here as well, because this is something that we've been discussing as we've had you both on the show throughout this season. There are now 8 deaths in Colorado this season. It's only February. I believe the average is about 6. Several high-profile deaths, including one here in Crested Butte, a longtime backcountry, considered one of the experts. There was also a large event in Utah. Of course, there was a large event in the San Juans. I'm also reading about less frequent avalanches that occur in New Hampshire. There was a death in the state of New Hampshire this year. So we know the snowpack has been unstable this season. Is that the only reason why we're seeing this happen this year, this phenomenon?
Oh, boy. Surely not the only reason, but I think
this is
the snowpack,
Ian, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're good.
It's not the only reason, but the influx of folks we saw in the backcountry last spring during COVID lockdown, we were fortunate enough to have a pretty stable spring-like snowpack. Yes, there were a few tragic deaths, some in this community as well, but we were fortunate in that sense that the snow is a little bit more stable. Now it's kind of the worst of the worst, and there surely are more people in the backcountry for a variety of reasons. One is the natural increase of backcountry users we've been seeing as a trend over the last 10 years or so, with better equipment, more attainable I don't know, more guidebooks, even more, just it's more of a buzz than it was 15, 20 years ago. One thing I just want to tack on to Zach's comments about our specific local snowpack is this last storm cycle over the last week added about a third to almost even a half of our whole season snow water equivalent. So we really did throw a huge load, relatively speaking, onto a very weak snowpack. So that's one. One interesting thing I've noticed this season, just tracking these unfortunate accidents and fatalities, is a large portion of these deaths have not been these novice users. They've been more advanced to expert veteran users, which I am a little puzzled about, but also, if you look for the bright spot, a little bit encouraged in the avalanche education efforts that various organizations and guide services and schools are seem to be making, in that we aren't seeing all these newbie folks getting killed. It's these more experienced users, which I don't know what more to take away from that, but I think it's a fairly worthy trend to point out. I don't know. I'm encouraged by that, being an avalanche educator myself, that something in the curriculum folks are teaching out there hopefully is getting through. The messages are getting through to look for unstable snow, signs of instability, recent avalanches, paying attention to the weather.
And the one that I keep hearing you guys mention is slope angle.
Yeah, that's the terrain is really the gas pedal for avalanche hazard and risk. So if you're skiing and riding and snowmobiling slopes less than 30 degrees in steepness, and those slopes are not connected to slopes steeper above, you're gonna have a pretty safe day out there. Is there risk? Yes, there's always inherent amount of risk, but you're gonna drastically reduce your likelihood of being caught or triggering an avalanche. One other very simple thing to remember is only expose one person at a time to avalanche terrain. It seems like a no-brainer, and it is hard to resist at times in the backcountry to not get that Instagram photo of the classic powder shot, but it really, please resist that urge and keep yourselves in safe places, well out of the way of these runouts. I cringe every time I hear about these multi-fatality accidents, lots of lessons can be learned by reading those accident reports, but a big one is just really try to expose one person at a time only if you do choose steeper than 30 degree terrain.
So should we all be suspect of those Instagram pictures that are taken from the bottom looking straight up a slope?
No, I don't want to go there, but just it is something to consider when you are staging those shots. And a lot of those professional photos that we, you know, drool over, those magazine covers, are shot on very small features. They're a bit deceiving in that the skier is picking up a bunch of speed and, as they say, smearing or buttering the bagel, where they're just carrying all their speed and then in one big turn throwing all that snow over their faces. So I think that does somewhat of a disservice to the realities of actual actual backcountry skiing. So
well, that's how I ski in. I don't know. That's I always look like that. Chris Rourke, you had a question for our guests.
Yeah. So Ian, it just stemming off of that, help me understand, both you and Zach. So we've heard about these larger parties and multiple people swept away. I read where communication between skiers is critical in these situations. How can a breakdown in communication lead to, you know, an incident like we've seen in the last week?
In a lot of ways.
I can jump in.
Yeah, go for it, Zach. Perfect.
Yeah, I wanted to add on to Ian's point about the multiple groups getting caught. And I think one of the major points this year is that we're seeing avalanches with our current snowpack situation, the persistent weak layers and kind of thick cohesive slabs that span across the terrain. We're seeing avalanches break wider than I think people are used to seeing on their normal routine. So, you know, in the case of the Silverton avalanche, they're descending a feature. I think they're spreading themselves out around a kind of smaller gully feature, and the group was kind of skiing it one at a time, regrouping. There was some miscommunication about how much of the group or like when one person was going to drop in and the next person go. And there was a bit of a miscommunication about where people were going to be on the slope. But then ultimately, I think the real surprise there was how wide and big that avalanche broke. So they may have been managing for a smaller piece of terrain that they're trying to ski one at a time. And then when the whole slope goes and they're all on the slope, it's a totally different game. So I think that's one thing is just, yeah, communicating with your group where you are on the slope, where a clear plan of, you know, first, like a good understanding of what you would expect if an avalanche breaks, like where's it going to break, how wide. And right now it's like things are going to break across the whole slope. They're going to run far. So if you're in avalanche terrain, you're choosing regrouping spots where you're completely out of those runouts. So it's, you know, if you are choosing to ski that type of terrain, skiing it one at a time and then pulling out into some mature trees, not stopping halfway down the path on a bench that may normally be safe during a small storm slab or a small persistent slab that, you know, runs a foot thick and runs down halfway down the slope. But right now we're not seeing those type of conditions. They're running, you know, in some cases they're running full track.
And the conditions this year are fairly unusual. They're something to be mindful of. At what point do, you know, I get it. I know you backcountry skiers, you love it, but when do you decide that really, maybe this isn't the year to go full bore? I don't know. Explain that to me.
Yeah. Silence.
I know. Exactly. Thank you for that. Thank you. She don't know. She ain't been out there.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. And that's something I ask myself. And I think I have been over the years gradually trending toward more conservative decision-making because the risk just isn't quite worth the reward. And I get it. There's some listeners out there right now thinking, no, man, I backcountry ski because it's like, I've heard in the past, it's like big wave surfing and there's always going to be risk. And that's their prerogative. That's the freedom that backcountry skiing provides. But what I would encourage folks to think about is the repercussions within your community and not only the community as a whole, but those search and rescue folks that over time, it really adds up and it takes a toll to those folks that pride themselves in helping out others in need and distress, but it takes a toll on them and your actions do ripple much wider than your choice to ski those steep slopes. So it's something that you can't resist to some degree, but you can have equally good rewarding days, especially in these conditions, skiing lower angle terrain. A 28 degree slope is probably steeper than most people think, and it can offer really fun powder skiing that you can get that Instagram shot skiing and riding. So keep that in mind. Your actions are wider than you may think, and that's my two cents in that. Zach probably has something to add.
And maybe. Zach, go ahead. And I feel Zach, yeah. Did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I don't really preach the abstinence as much as just choosing terrain that fits the conditions. And so, Chris, like I'm not discouraging people from going out as much as just telling them to choose the appropriate terrain. And right now it's low angle slopes like Ian was talking about. And, you know, I think on a year where we're seeing a lot of surprises, a lot of fatalities, it's good for everyone to take a notch back in what they consider safe terrain and maybe take it another step back because we're getting surprised and things are a little bit unusual. So it's, you know, people go out because they love being outside. They love the snow. They love the joy of riding powder. They love being with friends. And I think those are all great things. And it's just a matter of choosing the right terrain for the right day. And, you know, I think our forecast is a good place to start and see what the conditions are and kind of make a plan for the day. You know, you can be totally, I can go out on the dangerous of days and be totally safe out there. You just got to choose the right terrain.
Zach Guy and Ian Havlick are with the Crested Butte Avalanche Center. They're here with us on Community Matters, talking about what has turned into a very exciting, I suppose would be one word, season in the Crested Butte backcountry and beyond. And, you know, that question about when is it time to hang up, I hear so many backcountry skiers have that conversation on a daily basis. I would encourage you, the listener, if you have some thoughts that were sparked by that question, to call in and let us know. 970-349-7444. We'd love to have you join the conversation. I just think that'd be a great question to put out to our audience. What are the factors that lead to you saying, nope, not today, nope, not this season, too dangerous to be out there, or what's still making you get out there every day? Again, 970-349-7444. We only have a few minutes left with these two guests. We're going to be talking to data journalist Sandra Fish and Western Slope reporter for CPR Stina Sieg later on in the show. Guys, I wanted to ask, at what point, you know, we're talking about 8 deaths already this season, only February. At what point do governments start to regulate more? Are there examples possibly outside of the United States where governments regulate more access to dangerous terrain in the wintertime? And feel free, which I don't know which one of you would want to take that, but Zach.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I honestly don't know of any, so maybe Ian does. I mean, I know that the Europeans and the Canadians follow a similar model as us, where they put out avalanche advisories and then they kind of let the people control their own risk.
Sure.
Ian, do you know of anything different?
No, not specifically related to fatalities. There are places along Rogers Pass between Golden, British Columbia, and Revelstoke, British Columbia, that there are permanently closed areas, but that's due to more of the threat along the highway and the risk of an avalanche coming down onto the highway from a ski tour. But I don't know of condition-related closures or mandates from governments. I know that big accidents, big sentinel events, such as up in Canada several decades ago of a group of school kids getting killed, did instigate greater changes amongst both government regulators as far as education needed for leading school groups or stuff like that as the instructor. I think there will be potential changes down the pipe, especially if we go into record territory of national fatalities, possibly, but also, I don't know. It's a tough one. I would be surprised if anything changes, but I wouldn't rule it out either.
So we just got a call in from a listener from a longtime backcountry skier who has ramped down their comfort level with the terrain, looking forward to getting back out there. And I think, as I understand the comment here, you know, that's a reason to call it safe for a day because you want to go out and ski another day. And I see that as a very good reason. Again, 970-349-7444 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking with Zach and Ian. I always want to give you guys the opportunity to talk about Crested Butte Avalanche Center events and upcoming educational opportunities for folks.
Yeah, one more thing before I get to that, because it's pretty quick, but you know, with these historic or very widely propagating avalanches, take a look around the backcountry, take mental notes about how wide some of these slopes can run, and use that information to assist in future terrain decisions and see where these runouts are running to, and hopefully that can be a good lesson and learning outcome for you all about where you regroup. And oh yeah, back in 2021 in February or March, whatever, January, February, I don't even know what day it is anymore. Yeah, it ran super big. Aside from that, we've been doing a great job, better than ever, I feel like, getting the word out about the conditions and offering learning opportunities to the community. So the Fireside Chat series has been held virtually every other week since early January, and that's been a big hit. And we have another one coming up next week. Take a look at our website. I think it is the 18th of February. And that's going to be with Revelstoke, a Canadian forecaster up there, and St. Clair. And then we have a trailhead day. We're going to be just out giving high fives, or giving air high fives, I guess is more proper to say these days. But we'll be at the Slate River Trailhead this weekend. So stay tuned for that. Hope to see you out there. And then if you're a social media person, take a look at our story, that's our up-to-date kind of live observation feed of the avalanches we're seeing on our Instagram and Facebook pages. And we should also be coming out with some free short videos on avalanche rescue to replace our canceled beacon brush up that we hold in the early December usually. So stay tuned. We have a bunch going on, bunch more of the season ahead. So I just really appreciate the community support.
Yeah,
go for it, Zach.
I want to piggyback off of what Ian's just saying there with the community rescue class. That's a great opportunity. And just to highlight a success story this week, there was a full avalanche burial. Person was buried for 6 minutes and they got him out, and just shows that, like, with the proper training and skills, you can turn something that could be tragic to a success story.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ian and Zach. You can hear the KBUT Avalanche Forecast presented by the Crested Butte Avalanche Center every weekday morning right at 8 a.m. here on KBUT. It's also available every day online and on the NPR One app. Zach and Ian, we'll see you here next time.
Thanks so much. Super appreciate it. Stay safe out there.
This is KBUT's Community Matters. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Christopher Biddle, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Rourke. In just a little bit, we're going to be talking with data journalist Sandra Fish and Western Slope reporter for CPR, Stina Sieg, about their reporting on Representative Lauren Boebert, who represents Colorado's Congressional District 3, which, of course, includes Gunnison County. Give us a call to join the conversation, 970-349-7444. That's coming up next.